You are now entering the Back in Time podcast.
We came, we saw, we kicked his ass.
Said life was like a box of chocolates.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Here are your hosts, Kyle and JD.
Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast, and welcome to another episode of our podcast here. I don't know which number this is, JD. We might be on like 360 by now. I've kind of lost track, but how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling like maybe this is episode 369.
Ooh.
I have no idea, though.
I don't think we're there yet.
But seriously, I'm doing pretty good. It's a rainy day in Chicago, so I'm just kind of enjoying the autumn gloom, as it were, and rocking and rolling and doing what I do.
Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to diving into our episode here today and talking about some Halloween 4. But before we do that, I just want to thank you guys for hitting the download button on today's podcast. You can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, YouTube, pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find us. Really important, if you like this show, if you like the content that we're bringing to you guys on a weekly basis here, please drop us a 5-star review. That goes a long, long way in helping this podcast find new listenership, especially with iTunes and Apple Podcasts and their algorithms and a bunch of stuff that I don't know a lot about. So we appreciate any help you can give us there.
Listen to you using fancy words like algorithm.
Yeah, I don't even know what it means. I'm just saying stuff.
Yeah, you kind of are, and I like it. I like it when you say stuff. Say more stuff, Kyle. Say more stuff.
Well, shoot, man. I'd like to say a little bit about last week's episode.
Yeah, tell me about it.
A little bit of time. We dropped Scream 2. Fun episode. I really enjoyed recording that one. What was your feedback on our Scream episode here? Scream 2, not Scream 3. Some of the haters out there.
Yeah, there's definitely, I think that was the limit of the hate, was for that foible that we made. I'll take credit for it, too, because I could have texted you and because I noticed it. But
thanks. Jeez.
No, but, you know, big shout out and thanks to everybody for listening. And as always, like, tell us what you think. If you think that we're doing something well or if we're doing something that you hate, like, call us out on it. Like, big props to Dave because he always does that, and he's probably one of our more engaged listeners, and that's why we talk about him so much, because we love him and he loves us, I think. I hope. Please love us.
Please love us. No, I've got a really cool story that Dave was texting me about today, but when you guys listen to it, it's been a few days, but he actually stayed an hour late at work specifically so he could listen to Scream 2 today. Just volunteered. He's like, hey, I'll stay late. So he could plug in his headphones and listen to us on Scream 2. Throw down some knowledge. That's pretty awesome.
Well, thank you for that. Any other listeners doing stuff like that? When are you listening to us? That's a good question. Where do you listen to us? Are you on the toilet? Are you on the bicycle? Are you skateboarding down the road? Where does Back in Time Pod pop into your ears? I'm curious.
I love that. Yeah, I'd like to know too. Shoot us a tweet, Back in Time Pod, or Instagram us. I remember one of our listeners, RJ, who's been on the podcast before as a guest, he has like a farm. I'm pretty sure he listens to us while he's driving tractor. That's pretty awesome, too. I just like the idea of somebody like doing some like manly shit and listening to our podcast.
You think driving a tractor is manly shit?
Well, I work from an office at home in my shorts and a tank top most of the time. So, yeah, I would say driving tractors way more manlier.
You don't have a push lawnmower, do you? You've got one of those fancy ass ones where you get to sit on it.
Oh, God, I wish. Now, it takes me about 2 hours to cut my grass. It's a little bit of a trek. And I got to push mower that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, we're not all as lucky as you can afford a lawn care service.
Hey, well, somebody's got to do it.
I was hoping you say you don't have it. Wow, you really do.
I tried to mow the lawn once, and it just the lawnmower didn't start, and so I was like, you know what? 1-800-LAWN-CARE, $30, done.
Wow, shoot, I'd come cut your grass for $30. That's good money right there, man.
Hey, that's why they come, even when the grass isn't growing.
That's awesome. But I mean, let's get to the reason we're here. I know we talked a little bit, you know, on the teaser trailer about our first memories of Halloween 4. You know, the schedule's kind of catching up on us here, so we're not able to do like our scene-by-scene, minute-by-minute breakdown. But I do want to talk about this movie because I have to say, Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, bit of a sleeper for me, JD. I actually really enjoyed this movie. And I don't want to get any spoilers. I want to save that for the end on what you thought. But, you know, just give me like your little first reaction without giving too much away.
Definitely. My first reaction was I thought this was going to be like tripe, that it was just going to be kind of like a baloney, bullshit, play on your phone kind of a movie. And I was surprised at the quality of it and the quantity of deaths. Like, this is not a made-for-TV movie by any stretch of the imagination.
Not at all. There's some really great cinematography shots in this movie that we're going to definitely get into. So, you know, give the audience a little backstory real quick, JD. So pick up from Season of the Witch, 1982. Obviously, this movie comes along in 1988, so it's 6 years later. But kind of fill in our audience a little bit on what happened with Season of the Witch and how we end up here in The Return of Michael Myers.
Well, it's kind of like a damned bastard of a movie, Seasons of the Witch, where they kind of decided that they were going to essentially turn Halloween into almost like an anthology of frights kind of a thing, where they have the first two movies were Michael Myers, the third movie is the Season of the Witch, and there's some inclusion of Myers in a commercial, if I'm not mistaken, at one point. But their goal was to sort of create different levels of monsters and frights that Halloween stands for and represents. Mm-hmm. And that didn't really necessarily pan out the way that they wanted to, hence the return of Michael Myers in 1988, which I think is just such an aptly named, it's the return of Michael Myers. It's like, we're sorry, here's Michael Myers, he's returning.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off of that a little bit, so originally there was a script written for Halloween 4, and Joe Dante was John Carpenter's choice to actually direct this movie. However, the producer, Mohammed Akkad, who's basically like the godfather of Halloween movies, rejected the script and said it was too cerebral, and he insisted that any new Halloween sequel is going to have Michael Myers, because basically their feedback after Halloween 3 is people just wanted to know, where was Michael? So I think they maybe underestimated a little bit, and jump in on this, but do you think maybe they underestimated how popular Michael Myers was a character?
Yeah, I think they did. I think that there's two points to be made, because Season of the Witch is definitely a cult classic movie that people swear up and down by as being an excellent movie. And, you know, it's in our archives. We reviewed it last year, and it definitely holds its water for sure. But I think that they both didn't understand what they had with Michael Myers, and then they didn't understand what they had with Season of the Witch. And so they sort of shit two beds with one cob of corn, I think is the phrase. Nobody's ever said that in the history of man.
No.
But that's what I think.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm just, you know, kind of going back through some of my research. Like, one of the things that happened after John Carpenter and Deborah Hill left the production and kind of signed away their rights that they didn't want to be involved anymore, Akkad basically was just like, we're going back to the basics of Halloween. And he brought in a director, Dwight Little, from Ohio, and he had worked previously on episodes of Freddy's Nightmares, which I know you were a huge fan of, and a film called Bloodstone. So he did have a horror background, and I think that really serves him well in this one, because a lot of the things, although simple, like some of the shots are pretty like complicated when you really break them down and look at them from, you know, just a lens perspective. So what did you think about the direction of the movie from Mr. Little?
Yeah, it's a shame that we couldn't have Joe Dante in the chair because he's a legend in his own right. I'm a big fan of all of his work, but I don't think that Little did a bad job by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think that's where the problems in this movie lie, especially when we get to, as you mentioned, the cinematography. And some of these deaths are pretty brutal, which I know that relies on both the director, the cinematographer, the special effects team, the writing team. Like, it's a group effort to come up with what they were able to push out. And I was very happily surprised. I was like, fuck yeah, do that, Michael, do that.
So let's talk a little bit about the story. So the setting, again, is Haddonfield. We're familiar. The character of Laurie Strode was revealed to have died in a car accident, leaving Brittany with the Carruthers family, which included Rachel, the family's 17-year-old daughter. And Brittany's name was later changed to Jamie in the script, which is what we know her as, Danielle Harris, we'll talk about here in a minute. And that's really just a homage to Jamie Lee Curtis, which I thought was a nice touch by the new writer, which I believe was McElroy. So what do you think about that, just from a storytelling standpoint? Do you like the little tie-ins like that? Do you prefer they maybe stay away from it?
I think that it makes it a little, it's cool, you know, and obviously a lot of directors have made names for themselves based off of like inner movie universe tie-ins. Like, I mean, look what Tarantino does. Every movie has a little nod to his other movies, and he sits in the corner and he's like, but also, obviously he's awesome. But I know I kind of think that to an extent it sort of cheapens a little bit of it. We don't need it. It doesn't do much to the story overall. It's a nod for sure, which is great and I appreciate. But at the same time, I'm just kind of like, big whoop.
Okay. All right. Big whoopee. So, you know, one of the things I definitely want to get into here are some of just the death scenes in this movie, because I really do like them. You know, we kind of pick up right in the back of the paramedic, the ambulance, and we get a couple of deaths right off the back here, and they're pretty gruesome, man. Like the way he like pokes the dude's eye out, like he just like gouges his face, and I'm just like the whole time like, man, how strong are his hands to be able to drive like a thumb through dude's forehead? What did you think about that?
Yeah, that kill scene definitely stands out to me, because I think as Michael Myers grows and as his set of powers evolve, he becomes more and more of the monster that Loomis always knows that he is and can be. And that's definitely like a brutal sign that he can just thumb dude right in the face and just be like, fuck you, guy.
And then, of course, we have the mechanic who gets impaled by a metal rod. So no gun. So I know that that's a good positive for you. Were you a fan of the metal rod, though?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Love me a metal rod.
Okay. And there's that shot when he's, you know, with the mechanic here in that, what do you call, garage shop, basically. And Loomis comes in. He's like, Michael. He just gives gargly voice, and he sees them, and he's just kind of like staring at him. He's like 30 yards away, just like this long hallway. And the shot is so cool. And I was listening to the director explain like how they had it on a dolly and how they had to time out and like calculate the zoom, because what they did is they moved forward. But if you notice, Michael Myers never gets any closer. He stays the exact same way, but things come toward the camera. It's kind of like 3D without having 3D glasses on.
Well, I find that so fascinating, because Rob Zombie has used shots like that in a lot of his movies, and I love it.
Yeah, like that to me, like I mentioned that in the teaser trailer, and then I started going through all the special features and everything, and he's talking about just that specific shot, and I was like, oh man, wow. First off, pat on my own back that I caught it, recognizing how cool it was. But no, seriously. Hold on. I had to pat myself real quick.
There you go.
But no, I mean, I just think that's a great shot. And, you know, maybe I was a little harsh on him in the trailer, saying it looked a little bit like made for TV. Actually sitting down and watching it, it did not look made for TV at all.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. Like the trailer, we obviously had a smorgasbord of ideas and thoughts about the movie. And, you know, and one of the things that I mentioned in the teaser trailer episode was the explosion, how there makes no sense that there would be an explosion in this movie. And we do get the explosion at the mechanic shop, and it makes sense, but I don't think it was needed still, but at least it was logical.
Loomis really dodges a bullet there. And that's the second time he's apparently survived a explosion. So let's talk about that. Let's go all the way back to Halloween 2, by the way, in our archives. Great episode. And let's talk about the fact that apparently Loomis survives that giant explosion at the hospital. I mean, from a writing standpoint, I don't hate it. I love the fact that they put a little makeup on him and scarred him and gave him a limp, a la Dewey in Scream 2. Not quite as bad as Dewey's limp, but I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I can go either way on something like that, where I think that's what I was saying earlier, where I think they didn't necessarily understand what they had with Halloween 1 and 2, and they tried to put an end cap on it, and then to try to come back with it, they had to look at the storyboards and say, where can we fit in familiar characters that make sense? And that's why they sort of jumped the shark by saying, you know, Lori's dead in a car accident, and then obviously, no spoiler alerts, but maybe she comes back, maybe she doesn't, who knows?
Yeah,
there's a reason why she's one of the original Scream Queens, and she lasted the test of time. But I'm fine with them bringing Loomis back. I just feel like he's beat up pretty good. I don't know. I can give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay. All right. Now let's talk about a couple of the other deaths here. We've got Bucky, who is working on a transformer. So he gets thrown into the transformer and electrocuted. What do you think about that one?
Again, it's a showing of just how powerful Michael Myers is, that he just lifts him up like he's the Undertaker lifting up Rey Mysterio Jr. And he's just like, here we go. And then there you go. There you have it. Just tossing you like a dog tosses a stick. How strong is he? How much can Michael Myers bench press?
To be able to throw a man like that, basically cave in their face with a thumb. My gosh. I mean, I would imagine 800 pounds? Like, he's got to have freakish strength.
He's the Ivan Drago of the horror world.
I like that. Very nice. All right, and then we've got one that's not really Michael Myers. So the guy gets shot by the Hillbilly Brigade with the shotguns on accident. So we'll skip past that one. So Kelly, obviously, we see her get impaled through the chest with a shotgun here. We don't actually see any blood with her death, but what do you think about that one? That one I wasn't as excited about as I was maybe the next one with Brady.
Yeah, well, obviously all good things come to him, but I don't know. I think that we're starting to get into the season of where Michael Myers and the same happens to Jason Voorhees and even Freddy Krueger, where their deaths become less like realistic, where you're just thinking about like how horrible it would be just to have your throat slashed. And then you're just kind of like, this is awful. This hurts like hell and I'm going to die. And now we've got this young gal getting impregnated.
Definitely. Well, she might have been by Brady earlier, but they got a little cut off early by the sheriff.
Hey, a little cock block sheriff. Cock block cop. Say that 5 times fast.
No, thanks.
No, thank you, no. But no, it's a little like over the top. But I still appreciate it because it was a pretty freaking cool death scene. I just wish he had pulled the trigger at one point or like shoved it like into her stomach, then up her like her abdomen cavity towards the head and then pull down on the trigger, then her head blew up. That would have been cool.
Oh, okay. but there's a gunshot and you don't like guns in movies. Contradiction. Point, Kyle. All right, let's move on to Brady. So he's got the cool shot, man, of him, you know, kind of battling Michael on the staircase here. And one of the special features I was watching talked about how they got him lifted up in the air. And apparently they just kind of like strapped a 2x4 to him. And then they just raised it straight up in the air. And then obviously he's the second one to basically take a thumb to the face and then gets his neck snapped. I thought this one was brutal. I liked the whole fight scene on the staircase. And I thought it did a great job of like really building up that tension.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree with you. And anytime that Michael Myers can just sort of thumb stab somebody in the face and then break their neck, it's a fantastic day at work.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. And then we've got a couple other ones here, like in the back of the truck. Dude gets stabbed in the back and then just like thrown off of the pickup truck. And then another guy just gets tossed. And then the last one is Earl getting his neck ripped open. So that's kind of our last step. Now, there's actually 19 death scenes in this movie. So, JD, quick question here. How do you think that compares to Halloween 1, Halloween 2, and Halloween 3? All that we've covered. Do you think it's the most, the least? Where do you think it stacks up?
If I'm not mistaken, they kind of drop some of the numbers in this movie to how many people have died. And he kills 6 people before he even gets to Haddonfield. And if we obey the rules of the sequel, according to Scream 2, you need more kills. So I'm going to say that this is more.
All right. 19 was definitely the most. So 19 is first place. Halloween 3 had 17 deaths. Halloween 2 had 12. The original, only 7. So, yeah, by the rules... Jamie Kennedy, definitely correct. So, yeah, very interesting. Now, let's talk a little bit about the cast here, and then we'll kind of get to some final thoughts and, you know, maybe wrap this thing up here. But we've got Danielle Harris. We've talked about her on the podcast before. This was definitely like the first movie I ever remember seeing her in. She's playing Jamie Lloyd. What did you think about her performance here as a young Jamie?
Well, you know how I take kid actors, and you have to take it with a grain of salt because they're so young and they aren't accomplished the way that a seasoned actor, say a Michael Shannon, is, where he can take a scene and just bend your imagination to what reality is. So I get a little pulled out of movies like the nightmare scene that happened and where she's freaking out about the nightmare man and losing her shit by thinking that there's multiple Michael Myers in the closet, and they're just kind of like, stop whining. I know it's not all her fault because she's all of, what, 11 years old here or something. And it's, you know, comes down to, I think, you know, the challenge of trying to write a story and a screenplay and involving children actors and trying to get an adult performance out of them. And essentially what it is, I mean, this is a horror movie. This isn't, you know, Spy Kids or Little Giants where you can sort of get away with some bad acting. But, you know, it's just, for me, I think she did as well as she could have done with what she was given and what she had in her skill set. I think that I would give her an 8 out of 10.
Okay. Fantastic. Little known fact, she actually beat out another very well-known young actress at the time for this role, Melissa Joan Hart.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, how about that? So she was 10 when they started filming, turned 11 on set. So, yeah, very, very young. One of the things that I was reading about her, I watched a couple of YouTube clips just kind of talking about the movie. And she said that she wasn't really affected emotionally at all by this movie because all of the cast like went out of their way to make sure that they would like take off the mask. And it, when there was like a cut, they would like tell a joke and get her to laugh. So she never felt scared at all. But she was emotionally a wreck from the 2007 reboot with Rob Zombie. So check out this quote from her. I think you'll like this. So she said, I had a harder time emotionally with Rob Zombie's Halloween. and H2 than I did when I was a kid. When I was a kid, it was totally fun. I didn't understand when I did Rob's Halloween why it was so hard for me to shake it off. I'm like, I'm an actress. Why am I getting a feeling like I want to cry? This is weird. I did enough crying when I was there on set. I don't know why I'm still feeling this way. I think it's because it was the first time I was ever physically touched by Michael Myers. And as a little girl, as Jamie, he never got to me ever. Now, as an adult, I don't have my clothes on. I'm doing scenes I've never done before as an actor, and I'm actually being attacked. Even though I should know the guy by now, it's still a weird thing that happens with your psyche. Hmm. How about that? I would have never, ever assumed that she was more affected when she was an adult than when she was 11.
Well, I mean, I get a little bit, I mean, I don't get it. Obviously, I was never a child actor, and obviously I'm not an adult actor, so I don't get it the same way that she does. But for what you're saying, for her to be able to say that she was not invested in the scare tactics of the movie, where I feel like Rob Zombie, probably as a director, elevates himself to include that in what he's bringing out of the performance of his characters. I love Rob Zombie, and he probably smells really bad, but I'm not surprised by that.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit more about the cast. So we've got, obviously, Donald Pleasance, who made his return to the franchise. One of the producer, Mr. Akkad at the time, he said to Donald, he's like, yeah, how many of these do you think you're going to be able to do? And he's like, yeah, I'm going to have to really stop here when we get to like Halloween 22.
Yeah.
So like he was all in on the Halloween franchise, and I really like that. And I think that's also maybe part of the times back then, where if you were an actor, like that was a job. Like you wanted to do as many acting gigs as possible, where I think maybe stars now are a little bit more picky, and they're obviously paid a lot more, so they don't have to work as much. But this guy had 238 credits in his career. So very long career, 52 to 96. And yeah, he did quite a few Halloween movies. I think 5 in total, if I'm not mistaken.
Spoiler alert.
Well, jeez, come on. Ixnay on the X-Lay there, Chet.
Shop.
So what do you think about him here as Donald Pleasance? You know, he shot Michael. He shot him. He shot him 6 times.
That was good. That was a good one.
I got to build up to it. If I can build up to it, I'm pretty good.
Yeah, it's like masturbating. But seriously, insert laugh track. Ha, 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 ha. No, I like the way that he's in here, and he's damaged goods. I like the scene at the mental hospital where they're like, oh, Loomis? Well, he doesn't read his memos, and, you know, if he even comes into work, like, hopefully he'll retire or die after we get rid of Michael Myers. It's, like, kind of tongue-in-cheek to the fact that Loomis is still alive and kicking, what I appreciated and thought was funny. But he's a great actor. He brings a lot of energy. I love one in the scene at the gas station. Not the gas station. Well, it is a gas station. But the mechanic garage scene where he's got his cane, and he's like, Michael! And then he's like walking. We were talking about the scene earlier, and he drops his cane to like go on his own two paws to like shoot the worst shots ever at Michael Myers, and he misses like every single one. And then, Dom,
hold still. I would be hilarious if he said that. He's like, Michael's like takes off his mask. He's like, I haven't moved. Like, what is this?
I love in the sound effects in this movie. Like, there's a lot of gunshots, and there's pew, pew.
Yes, we did the exact same noise.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in this movie.
Oh, man, that's great. Yeah, so he's fantastic. I love him as Dr. Samuel Lewis. And then we have pretty much another.
Loomis.
And we've got another newcomer. She'd only done one movie prior to H4 here, but it's Ellie Cornell as Rachel Carruthers, the older sibling, even though it's not really her sister. But what did you think about her? I thought she was fantastic.
I think she was written well, that there was some great dynamics between the two of them, where there's some give and take between her as an older, essentially a foster sibling, if anything, where they're not related, they're not blood. And so like there's a, I think there's a decent amount of emotion that sort of escalates between the older and the younger, especially when it comes to dating and stuff like that. And like the way that she's looking out for the young Danielle Harris. And I think she does a great job. And especially when you're considering this as a part four horror movie from 1988 that probably could have and should have been released direct to video. They really pulled a lot out of their actors and their special effects crew. Like, props to them. I mean, I've got nothing bad to say.
Okay. Fantastic. We have to talk about Michael Myers. So in this one, the stunts are being done here by George Wilbur, the man behind the mask here. Just to give you a little idea of the type of movies that George had been a part of prior to this, Monster Squad, Die Hard, The Burbs, Ghostbusters 2, Total Recall, Silence of the Lambs, Suburban Commando Archives, awful movie, great episode. I mean, this guy was all over some massive movies, Star Trek 2, Wrath of Khan. I mean, just what did you think about him here? I mean, this is really kind of the first time that, you know, I guess we see him like, I guess like in the first two, I feel like he's kind of known as the Shape. And in this one, he's more known as Michael.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's I think you bring up a good point, because I think there's a lot of emotion to the actions of what he's trying to do and trying to accomplish here. So he can't get Laurie, so he's just going to get the next best thing that he can. Hopefully we get a little bit into some of the story components before we end the episode. But I think he brings a lot of the Shape to the movie, but he's less stocky in the way that he is in the first movie and the second movie, where he's in a by a bush and then home, he's gone. And he's more jump scare.
Yeah.
Which isn't a bad thing. So I'm just, you know, that doesn't go to the actor's ability at all. It goes to, you know, writing and direction. But I don't love the mask in this one. I think it's a little pale faced.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about the mask either. But the thought behind it, just so you know, from a direction standpoint, is they wanted it to look more like a cheap mask that you could stop into any gas station and buy.
Well, that's
why. Yeah, I mean, for sure. Like, you could definitely buy that mask anywhere. It wouldn't cost you much money. Last bit of the only other thing I want to talk about as far as casting, this guy popped up and I was like, oh my gosh, I hope that you picked up on this cameo here. He's got a very short scene here. He's Reverend Jackson Sayer. He picks up Loomis in his truck. It's Old Man Withers and Old Man at the Bar from Wayne's World and The Wedding Singer.
Holy shit, it is, isn't it?
It sure is.
Holy shit.
Yep, I was so excited when that popped up, and I was like, oh my gosh, I hope JD picked this up.
I most certainly did not. I'm so happy that you're bringing it up and surprising me with this news right now.
Yeah, fantastic little scene for him. And yeah, I mean, he deserved it. I thought he did good. I mean, he kills it, like in Wayne's World and Wang Singer. Like, he steals the scene when he's in it.
Oh, hell yeah, he does.
Guy was underrated. Okay. All right, well, I know you wanted to get to some of the, like, the story components, so why don't I let you kind of take over for this part and, you know, maybe discuss, like, some of the points that you liked or that you just want to bring up.
I definitely, like, highlighted the parts that I think that were good. I've been very positive so far in this episode, which is not normally my strong suit. I can kind of be a damper on Kyle's positivity party. But there's two things that I wanted to discuss, and one is the ending.
Okay.
But before we get to the ending, I want to talk about how, from a writing standpoint, essentially, we have no story here. And that this is the kind of movie that, if it were fresh in 2020, would not fly. If you turned in this screenplay to any indie producer or production house, they would say, so what of it? Like, he escapes from prison and tries to kill somebody.
Okay.
Like, that's it. And I'm not saying that legitimizes any of what they put together production value-wise, because I think that the movie's a lot better visually than it is structurally. But I'm just trying to find like a shred of a storyline or a narrative or anything. I mean, everything that they have that they can work off of is callbacks.
Yeah, there is a lot of callbacks. I mean, there's a little bit of a story with Jamie's character, but that's, yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, I mean, that's really kind of the extent of it from that standpoint. But yeah, I kind of look at it like a film version of like Jackass almost. Yeah, I think that'll get me a little bit of hate, but hear me out on this. So Jackass, like, there's no story behind it. There's just stunts. And I feel like in this movie, it's not so much stunts, but it's situations that we can put the characters in and situations that we can involve Michael in. And then each one ends with something happening and it leads to the next thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're exactly right. It's essentially, or what could be like a series of vignettes or just short films of brutal kill scenes that are just thematic to what the overall premise of the movie, with whatever the log line was, Michael Myers returns home to Haddonfield to gain his vengeance on Laurie Strode's daughter. Okay. Yeah. So that's the storyline, and that can be done in 10 to 15 minutes, in all honesty.
I want to bring this up now. I feel like I should wait till the end, but I might forget it by then. Okay, in a 2020 post-COVID-19 world where who knows if theaters are even going to be around in 2021 because they're all just under so much financial stress right now. 5 years from now, could you see Halloween being like a Netflix series? In almost doing that, where he just, like, each episode, like, almost like an episode of Dexter, where just something new is going on with Michael.
I would love to see something like that, but then you would have to turn him into an anti-hero of sorts, which means you'd have to give him a personality, which defeats the purpose and point of him being all-encompassing of evil.
I agree. I don't want him to have any personality. Yep, I hate it. Okay. All right. Well, hey, that's why I throw it out there, because then you can bring me back to reality and be like, hey, listen, we can't do that with Michael Myers.
Now, a video game or like an animated series or a comic book series, which I know that there's a lot of that's already out there that exists in that realm, where he's just the psychopath. What I would like to see, actually, I thought about this during the movie, is I would like to see just more interaction between Loomis and a young Michael Myers, like really breaking down how messed up he is in the head. And I know Rob Zombie touched on a lot of that and got into the childhood and the antics and everything that goes into it. But I almost feel like there can be an entire movie without Michael Myers killing a single soul.
Well, that's very interesting. I like it. Okay. Well, I know you wanted to get to the last scene as well. Let's dive into that a little bit. Now, are we talking the scene after Michael or the part with Michael?
I was talking the scene after Michael.
Okay.
After his, let's talk about both scenes, because
sure.
He gets a cavalcade of bullets like ladled into him. And Danielle Harris and Michael Myers, they touch. She touches his hand.
That's true.
It's not at all in the way that she means that quote by, but there is contact between the two of them. So I just find that interesting that she said what she said in the quote that you read, but there's no way that he gets back from this, and he collapses into the ground and the ground collapses on him. And there was that shotgun that the sheriff had. That was like some Doom level shit.
Yeah, no, it was pretty incredible. I mean, like, geez, I mean, we just talked about it a second ago with dudes' stunt list, but RoboCop-esque, the way they just light him up with lead here. And, yeah, send him flying, and, yeah, I like the part, and I think this will really lead us into the last scene, but there's definitely some, like, sentiment going on there with Jamie, where she leans down and like holds his hand, and then they're like, Jamie, get out of here. Like, just start mowing him down. So yeah, no, I think it's a really good ending, and a lot of fog in this movie. Can I say that, you know, throughout the movie, a lot of fog, a little heavy on the fog machine.
they were ready. There was one guy whose job was the fog, and he was he was high the entire time. He was blowing his joint into the fog machine, and he was like, "Yeah."
Pleasant's like, "Where did we get this guy from?" He actually was on the Fog, John Carpenter movie, so we just brought him over. Totally adds up. All right. Perfect. So yeah, let's get to that final scene. You know what? Since I have a clip, let's listen to the clip and then let's talk about it.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
All right, so JD, that's it. It just ends with Loomis, and he's just like, "No, no!" And he actually tries to shoot Jamie, and then the sheriff stops him. But I love it. He's just like, "She's pure evil." He didn't say that. I added that part.
Well, good for you. It just, I draw comparisons personally between this ending where we see essentially Danielle Harris. We see the scene where the mask is donned onto the camera. You don't know who's wearing it. A murder happens. A murder most foul occurs. And Loomis, the great detective that Dr. Loomis is, comes up the stairs, hears the scream, and sees none other than clown costume wearing Danielle Harris with a pair of bloody scissors in her hand. So to me, it reminds me of like the reveal in Sleepaway Camp.
Oh, okay.
Where you've got like, you hear them, you got this noise, and they're like, "Oh, let's go investigate this noise." And then boom, smash to a horrifying standoff between yourself and the killer, who is now a young girl and pure evil in your words.
Yeah. And I honestly, it's been so long, I can't even remember what happens in part 5 with her. So we'll save that for next year when we cover it. But this is like, to me, a fantastic ending, knowing that there's a sequel to this coming up in 12 months. And that's exactly how it played out in theaters back then. So they spent 3 weeks in theaters, like we talked about in the teaser trailer. They got ready for a VHS release. VHS comes out, Scream 5 goes in the theaters. Boom, boom, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. They make a bunch of money.
I'm sorry, Scream 5 goes into theaters?
Did I say Scream again?
Yeah, you've got Scream
on the brain. I've been watching, can I be honest right now? I've been watching a ton of Scream. I went through the whole series, and that's why I can't get it off of my mind. But yes, obviously, Halloween 4 comes out, goes in the VHS. Halloween 5 comes in the theaters. They make a ton of money.
That's fantastic. Did you watch the TV series of Scream yet?
I actually started it.
And drum roll?
I'm going to give it a couple episodes before I judge it. Okay. Not terrible. Not making me jump up and down either yet. So we'll see.
I'm going to go based off of your recommendation because I know nothing of the TV series. Like, I don't know. Does it connect to the movies at all? Is it its own original entity? Is it going to connect to the actual existing Scream 5 movie that you faux pawed over? I know nothing.
Yeah. I don't know. We better stop talking about it before I mix it up again with Halloween before we
You better not cut any of that. I want you to keep all of that in.
No, I'm leaving it in for sure. So yeah, let's wrap this thing up. So, you know, I told you to kind of leave us kind of guessing at the beginning. I know you said, you know, you liked it. It's, you know, more than what you thought. Overall, man, the movie is now, you know, 32 years old. How do you think Halloween 4 has aged?
I'm pleasantly surprised with what I saw. And, you know, the little coda of an ending that they included in there, because they could have ended it with the death of Michael Myers again. But they threw in this little out of left field scene where you're just, I don't remember what happens in part 5, personally, like you're saying. So I have no idea where this train goes next, and I'm kind of excited to find out.
Yeah, I was also, Donald, pleasantly surprised as well with Zing. How this thing, hey, look at me, how this thing played out, because it was just, it's so much better than what I remembered watching, you know, so long ago. Yeah, I feel like it's aging very nicely. Actually, if you go back to our Season of the Witch episode from last year, that was also a huge sleeper that we both really enjoyed and we thought was way better than it actually, you know, got credit for at the time. So I can't wait for 12 months from now when we fast forward and we're talking about Halloween 5 to see how that one holds up. And then a year after that, when we get into Halloween 6 and then H2O and then Resurrection and then Rob Zombie, and then it doesn't end, people. I mean, there's more and more coming out.
That's true. That's true. Halloween Kills coming out next year.
Back in Time Podcast 2029, when we're covering Halloween did kill, but now it's resurrected. The new sequel coming out.
Oh my gosh. And there's time travel involved now.
Starring Jamie Lee Curtis, like 85 years old.
Back in time to try to stop Michael Myers from being born. It's butterfly effect is what it is, but with Michael Myers.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, I mean, that's it, man. We'll put a ribbon on this one. Halloween 4 is in the books. We'll be back in 12 months, be talking about Halloween 5. But a little preview for next week, JD. We've got another fun one to discuss, and it was the poll topic winner that we posted earlier in the month. We're doing Friday the 13th, part 3. You feeling jazzed up about part 3? What are you thinking?
I am very jazzed up because I'm anticipating that I'm going to have the same positive response that I had for Halloween 4 with Friday the 13th part 3, because it's, I think there's similarities between the two points in each franchise where you have the return of Michael Myers, but we actually have the, as we know it, birth of Jason Voorhees. So it's kind of like what was seen before set the tone, but what we get from here on out is the franchise.
I'm very interested because, you know, going back to our buddy Phantom Dark Saint Nick Dave, yeah, texted me earlier in the day reminding me that we crapped all over Friday the 13th part 2, and apparently we were not fans. And I was like, well, good news, we've already recorded the teaser trailer and Captain Negative JD loved it. I think we're going to be okay.
I think we're going to be okay. That's good that he responds to you. He doesn't respond to me.
No, he hates you. But
yeah, I know. Well, most people do.
Yeah, it's a problem. But, you know, we'll wrap this thing up for now. We'll be back in a couple of days. Teaser trailer for Friday the 13th. And then wrapping up the month. Probably going to be cutting it down to the wire to get this thing recorded. But we will bring you, by hook or by crook, Friday the 13th, part 3. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys in a couple days. See ya. 3 days.